Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery on Round Rock, where we talk about games, comics, and other stuff on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And let's go to the show for this week. It's the Roguecast for Wednesday, October 14th, and we're going to get right to it because, again, big week. Lots of news coming out of New York Comic Con. Big giant week of comics. October is Marvel's big relaunch month. Mm-hmm. Image is also launching a few big books this week, so... And then we got topics to talk about. TV is coming back strong. And it's also Halloween time. So this may be a bigger than usual podcast, or, you know, it may not. We'll see. I never know how these things are going to go.
It's not going to be smaller than usual.
No, it will not. So we'll jump right into the store news. As we record this, Reading with Rogues is tonight. So we're jumping ahead on...
What the new reading...
I'll get to it.
You go ahead, sir.
All right. So Monday, October 19th is our Gaming with Rogues Forbidden Island over at Lamppost Coffee. And then, as we've been saying, October 30th and 31st, we'll be down at Wizard World, down at the Austin Convention Center. And Nick will be up here running Halloween Comic Fest on October 31st.
I may even be in costume. You don't know.
You might. And then, our Reading with Rogues for next month, for November, is going to be Top 10, the Alan Moore, Gene Ha, Xander Cannon.
Superheroes as Cops.
It's a big trade. It's like 12 issues of comics for like $25. If you you get it this month from us, you get 15% off. If you have a Rogue card, you get 25% off. And it's a great book. It's my favorite Alan Moore book.
Yeah. That's it's one of Alan Moore's sort of most approachable stories, too.
It's lighter and more fun.
Yeah.
But without being just so light.
Filled with like, great stories and ideas.
Yeah. All right. So comic news and TV news. Let's do the comic news first, because there was a fair amount of it out of New York Comic Con. I think we already talked about IDW getting the rights to ROM Space Knight.
Yep.
Still no news on whether or not they're going to have reprints of the Marvel stuff because of the whole licensing stuff.
Yeah. I can't imagine them pulling it off because ROM met just about everybody in the Marvel Universe,
right?
Yeah, literally one of the first comics I ever bought was a ROM issue where he met Power Man and Iron Fist.
Yeah, I would love if they can do reprints. We don't know if that's going to be the case. But they also announced they've got Micronauts. And they announced creative teams. So in 2016, we will see Micronauts by Cullen Bunn and David Baldion, and ROM the Space Knight by Christos Gage and Chris Ryall, and David Messina and Paolo Villamele art. ROM will also debut as part of their Free Comic Book Day 2016 offering.
Did Chris Ryall do that book that was like the ROM-esque book?
Yes.
A little way back? You know, I meant to get around to that, and I never got around to it.
I liked the first issue, and then I lost track of it.
Okay.
But kind of cool. I want these
to come through, but I have a little bit of a hard time imagining them separated from the Marvel Universe.
Yeah.
Less so with Micronauts, although that had so many characters that I think were original to Marvel and they may not have access to.
Right.
Like, essentially, they had their own sort of Star Wars group. But, like, there's like five main characters in Micronauts and then lots of ensemble guys in the background.
Right. Well, and also... The art on these was like Michael Golden and
right. Michael Golden. Later, he was succeeded by a young but very talented Butch Geist.
Yeah,
and ROM didn't have like spectacular art.
No,
it was good. It was Sal Buscema, but I think some of his strongest stuff. And it was notably, I think, an inker probably gave it some nice polish.
Right.
Like I liked the art in ROM, but
I don't know that. I think that what people really want out of these is reprints of the old stuff,
right?
Which may not happen, but this is kind of cool to see it relaunch, and we'll see next year they're going to give it a big push. So,
yeah.
There's also Attack on Titan is getting an anthology. That is the manga about people eating giants. So Kodansha Comics is going to
people-eating or people who are eating giants.
People-eating.
Got it.
Yes.
Proceed.
Giants who eat people.
Now I understand.
Not people who eat giants.
Now I understand the concept.
So anyway, they're doing a full-color, 250-page anthology set in the post-apocalyptic world of Attack on Titan. It's going to be coming out in fall 2016. And the lineup includes Brendan Fletcher, Tomer Anasa-Fanuka, Faith Aaron Hicks, Kate Leth, Michael Oeming, Paulo Rivera, Gail Simone, Scott Snyder, Cameron Stewart, Babs Tarr.
So wait, who is this coming out to?
This is Kodansha Comics.
Because Marvel did a special for Free Comic Book Day. So the actual publisher is doing this, but it's going to be color, and those are very
And it's Western creators.
Right, so it's going to have like something of a Western.
The deal is to see what Western comic creators bring to the Attack on Titan universe.
That is weird but fascinating. That's kind of cool.
I'm curious about it. It sounds interesting.
Faith Aaron Hicks and Kate Leth, those are like, you know, Well, wait, is Kate Leth an artist as well?
Yeah.
Okay. But I they're kind of on, like, more on the, like, slightly cartoonier side.
And on the indie side, yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, precisely what they'll bring. I don't know much about Attack on Titan, but it's kind of, I've watched a few episodes of it. It's fairly gruesome action-adventure stuff.
Yeah.
I'm trying to figure out what they'll do with it.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. Dark Horse announced something that we've all been waiting for a long time, even if you're not a giant fan. Mobius, the famous French creator.
Right, literally probably the most famous European creator.
They are finally going to be doing, like, sort of nice Dark Horse hardcover editions of some of his work.
Oh, nice.
And hopefully more affordable than the crazy humanoids $95 hardcovers they've been doing.
I would think that they'd probably be more affordable.
So I would guess these will be, they haven't announced too much about format or when. It's going to be 2016 sometime, but I imagine this will be kind of like the, what's the other guy? The guy who does these sort of erotic comics.
Manara.
They did a bunch of Manara hardcovers that were really nice.
Yeah, yeah.
And I imagine these will be like that. Probably $50 hardcovers, probably several hundred pages, you know, nice.
Dark Horse has great production values. Yeah. So, I mean, they're sort of like Image with their hardcovers. They're very, very fancy.
I'm excited to finally have a little Mobius in my collection.
And, you know, I imagine this is one of those where, you know, like our weeks, European comics have been very hit and miss with our audience over the years of the store. Is this going to be one where, like, ideally, like, if people are kind of looking to check some of these out, they should, it's pretty early on, but they will want them to, like, kind of let us know in advance?
Would be good to know, yes, because we probably want to order a ton of these because they are hardcover and fancy and all that. But if you're interested, let us know. We'll know more. We'll know more about that. I'm sure they'll pop up in previews picks next month, next year.
Like, along with, like, Kirby, Will Eisner, and, like, you know, Harvey Kurtzman from EC Comics.
Yeah.
You know, Mobius represents probably like one of the five most legendary artists, comic artists of all time.
Right. Yeah, I agree. All right. So Marvel has announced another Star Wars book. No huge surprise here because Star Wars books have done very well for them.
Now, this is just another miniseries. Right?
Yeah, just a miniseries to follow up after Chewbacca, I believe. Yeah.
Is this, I don't remember what this is. Is it IG-88?
It is not IG-88.
Dude, I want to see an IG-88.
No.
That one.
In January... it's going to be set during Anakin's Padawan days, during the Clone Wars. It's going to be called Obi-Wan and Anakin. And it's written by Lando writer Charles Soule. You might know from any number of other books like Death of Wolverine, Civil War.
He's going to be writing Daredevil.
She-Hulk. We like Charles Soule.
Yep. Yes. And there are books at any given time, and it's usually
pretty
good.
All the Inhuman titles.
Yes. And art is by Shattered Empire artist Marco Cicchetto, who we also like.
Yeah, that's a good team.
So, yeah, I'm looking forward to that. That's going to be in January. And then finally, in comic book news, there is a crossover coming between Spider-Woman, Spider-Gwen, and Silk. Just going to cross over all those titles.
I also did not see that piece of news. The just a crossover between their individual titles.
Yeah, and it's going to be, you know, universe hopping because Spider-Gwen's in another universe.
Oh, right.
So, but yeah, those.
Especially the Spider Ladies are going to meet.
Yes, the Spider Ladies are going to meet, and that sounds fun because those are my favorite books.
Now, Spider-Woman has definitely met Silk. Right,
they've met each other. They've all met each other.
Yeah,
during Spider-Verse.
Yeah, that's true.
They know of each other,
but that's cool.
Yeah. All right. Moving on to TV news. We don't know much about this, but they announced that there is going to be a new Justice League series on Cartoon Network.
Yeah, I think it was something that was like fans caught some, you know, some bit of leaked information on like Twitter or something like that. Somebody said something they shouldn't have, and they're like, "Wait, is there going to be some new cartoon?" And then I guess Warner Brothers.
Yeah, Cartoon Network just owned up to it.
Cartoon
basically.
Network is like, "Yep, here's some promo art for it. Yeah. Stop asking."
And it looks like the new Justice League. It looks like Cyborg's in it.
Yeah, sort of a new 52-ish.
Yeah,
but we don't know whether, you know, like, does Bruce Timm have a hand? Does anybody big?
I bet he doesn't. Bruce Timm sort of bailed out except to do direct-to-video.
Well, I guess I was thinking those kind of creators though. Like, what's his name? Who's the guy who did Gargoyles and so on?
Greg Weisman.
Yeah, Greg Weisman.
That'd be nice.
You know, if they have anybody notable. And I always forget, who were like the showrunners for, say, Avatar The Last Airbender?
Oh, Brian, I can't pronounce their names. Brian Conizio and Michael Dante something.
Yeah, I was just thinking of like the notables that would be, like, if you saw their name, you'd be like, oh, I'm going to check it out.
I need some names that I know because DC's like...
If they did a Justice League, that would be really awesome.
I'm a little worried it's going to be more like what they're doing with like Teen Titans Go, which is very successful but aimed much younger than me.
The art in this did not look like it.
Yeah, I'm also worried it's going to be two new 52.
I believe that could be.
It looked very Young Justice in the way of sort of anime.
That'd be good.
The style looked like Young Justice to me. Yeah,
They've got a real uphill road because Justling Unlimited is basically the perfect version of that show.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Is they've really, but you know, it's not like they're going to, you know, they hit the high water mark with Batman, but they're still making Batman cartoons.
Yeah,
it seems like to me at least the best Batman cartoons. You know, barring maybe some of their movies that have turned out well, like, you know, the Red Hood one or whatever, that is when they do go very different from what they've done before. So Brave and the Bold.
Yeah.
Really good, much more kid-friendly and, you know, superhero team-up-y.
Occasionally very dark.
just every once in a while, yeah. So hopefully this will do something that sets itself apart from Justice League Unlimited.
Yeah. We also saw a trailer for Rebels Season 2, which premieres here in the next couple weeks.
And although I have not seen it, Randy, you've been digging it?
I love Rebels.
And Nick, have you been following it?
Yeah, it's great.
I just bought the first season on Blu-ray to rewatch. Mm-hmm. I've been blazing through Clone Wars, and I'm about through Season 4 of that. And I like Clone Wars, but I love Rebels. I think Rebels is
Nick,
a great show.
Where do you put them?
I actually kind of put them on the same level.
Okay. Just different stripes of Star Wars?
Yeah. Goodness. I mean, I think they're both great at what they do, so.
Yeah, Rebels, I really like Rebels. I like their cast. I was very nervous about it at first. Because it looked kind of goofy. They had the clanker robot. You know, they had their R2-D2 type guy. They had the girl in sort of the pink Boba Fett uniform.
And there was a kid hero.
There's a kid hero who had like a energy slingshot. I was really nervous. The only thing that made me think I was going to like it is because Greg Weissman was running it. And as it turned out, these characters are really good. They added a nice little bit of darkness to it. It's a really good show. And the first season was great. And they brought back a notable Clone Wars character at the tail end is a big surprise, and that character is very prominent in the trailer for Season 2.
Well, I think also it set roughly during the same era as A New Hope.
Yeah.
Its playground is like our favorite Star Wars.
No, it's
era.
That's what's cool. It's prior to New Hope. It's like,
but I'm saying it's in an era when the bad guys are the stormtroopers and the good guys are the rebels.
Well, to give you sort of some sense of how popular that the Rebels series is, the Star Wars Black figures set.
Yeah.
They have so many figure options that they are going to do, and yet they are actually going to produce a Star Wars Black Kanan figure.
Oh, nice.
And another figure that I'm not going to...
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Now, does that mean it's going to be kind of a realistic rendition of him?
No, it is actually a cartoon Star Wars Black version of Kanan.
It'll have like the posability that comes with those figures.
Yeah. Oh, that's very cool. Yeah, no, the thing is, it's set prior to the Rebels being a... Like, the Rebels are cells, and they're early on. And so we're getting to see the foundation of the Rebel Alliance, which I don't think we've seen.
No,
and so the teaser's really cool because it shows, like, the invention of the B-Wing. Mm-hmm. Like, it shows, like, the B-Wing being a new prototype.
Was that actually Admiral Ackbar, or was that just a...
It might be Ackbar, because Ackbar is in Clone Wars.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know if you've seen those episodes yet, but he's in Clone Wars.
But, yeah, you see a... Well, what's his... race?
Mon Calamari. Was he Mon Calamari?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you see him or a fellow fishman talking about the new B-Wing in this trailer, and, you know, he's talking about how it packs a punch, and just from video games and stuff, I know that the B-Wing is a loaded-for-bear kind of thing.
Yeah.
Difficult to fly, but just geared up.
They also introduced some new bad guys, the new Inquisitors, who are sort of, they call them the Red Blades, and they have red lightsabers, and they're basically hunting down Jedi kids with Jedi potential. They show... the clones back, which is really cool.
Yeah, a couple of now somewhat aged clones.
Yeah,
that look like kind of a little bit like Batman and Dark Knight. That,
yeah,
you know, it's like a badass.
Was the thing they were supposed to have rapid aging. So
yeah.
They definitely weren't, you know, traditional. Right. We're going to get old quick.
And has Darth Vader played much of a role in the first season?
Darth Vader is in the movie that launches Season 2, and he is scary as hell.
And it looked like he was going to be a guy that they kind of avoided at all costs. There was some line where they're like, we were lucky to have survived.
Yeah.
You know, there's not going to be any plan to try and beat him.
Yeah, this is not like Luke when Luke first fights. You know, nobody engages with Darth Vader.
Right. What's interesting is, I mean, can we say who I guess they've revealed who the other...
They have revealed because it was their big reveal at the end of Season 1. But yeah, it's Ahsoka.
Right, who was Anakin's Padawan?
Yeah,
Padawan.
And everybody who watched Clone Wars was a little upset that they never really dealt with, like, well, what happens to Ahsoka? And everyone was assuming they were going to kill her or something like that.
But they had plans.
And
I mean, she gets... I will say, you guys have not seen it. Oh, it does get it.
There is a thing. Okay,
she does get an ending.
Oh, okay.
What could have stood as an ending if there was not?
I mean, it leads into Rebels. But yeah. She gets an ending on Clone Wars.
Okay, all right. Yeah, but it's one of the big mysteries of season one that pays off really nicely.
And I forget her name, but she comes back to voice her.
Yeah.
Same voice. Yeah.
A character I think we were all, everybody was nervous about. Again, another kid character.
Yeah.
But who kind of proved herself as the show went on.
She grew exponentially.
Well, the interesting thing about this is, of course, as Anakin's Padawan, that is a kind of a direct effect, you would think, on Vader.
Yeah, well, that's one of the things when she shows back up, they deal with that pretty quickly. So it's interesting. It's the trailer is great. There's a lot of sort of there's some good space battles. Mm-hmm. They introduce a bunch of characters. They show a bit of Sabine's backstory that we're going to see. Yeah. Sabine being their bounty hunter and sort of the she does like spray paint. She's a tagger.
Yeah,
right. She's tagged up her Boba Fett armor, which is kind of cool. So this is it's funny because watching Clone Wars, I see that they're continuing what Clone Wars did with Rebels. They're like they're doing a very direct continuation of what that was.
I only saw the movie of Rebels, but I did feel it refined a bit Clone Wars, and I think because it's an era that, you know, by its very nature is a little bit more interesting to me for Star Wars.
Yeah,
even though I appreciated I was, honestly astonished that the Clone Wars era could produce stuff that I would be interested in after the prequels.
Sure.
But it is a fun playground. There's, tons of neat new things to do in the Clone Wars era. But you still have a Galactic Senate and trade negotiations and things that bog it down a little bit. Whereas the kind of things that they can, bring in from A New Hope and, pre-circa that era, it's just kind of cooler.
Yeah, it's much more action-y. It's much more the war is on.
Right.
Scrappy rebels against an unbeatable empire, yeah.
My big problem with the prequels initially, or, aside from sort of Lucas's sort of just his whole directorial handling of it, but was that I didn't kind of like the gray area for Star Wars. I like the, good guys versus bad guys in the original trilogy.
Yeah.
Now, I came to see what they could do with it. It's like, are the Jedi on the right side? I don't know. It's difficult. But I have to admit, I like seeing, the Stormtroopers are such good villains, it's nice to get a little more black and white, honestly.
Yeah. Finally, in TV news, they have cast Madam Mask for Agent Carter Season 2. And the person they cast is Wynne Everett from Newsroom, who we believe to be the sorority girl
who becomes one of the interns.
Becomes one of the interns.
And famously, even if you've never seen it, the clip that goes around that the America is not the greatest country in the world. She's the girl who asks the question.
Yep. And then she becomes a true believer because it's an Aaron Sorkin show, and that's what happens.
Right. She ends up being hired and all that.
It's a weirdly young casting for her. It seems like
it does, but that's kind of TV.
But it's going to be set in what period? I mean, it's
World War II, yeah, so, or 1950, yeah.
Right, but they're not going to be, using the character in present.
I don't think so.
I feel like Madam Mask has always been a villain who seemed a little bit more like she was probably in her 30s or 40s at least.
Yeah,
not at least, but 30s or 40s.
It's a weirdly young casting for me, especially because against Peggy Carter, you'd think she'd want to be a little older, more experienced.
Well, in the same sense that usually there's attrition in almost all movies. Heroes tend to be young, villains are older.
Yep.
They kind of have the experience and the guile of age, just like I do.
Yes. That's how old people are all evil.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is a good thing. It's a fresh spin.
We'll see. I don't know. I like her well enough. It's a bit of weird casting for me, but I still like the idea of Madam Mask taking on Agent Carter.
So that was fun. Can I not say that actress's name? Married to Michael Douglas.
Catherine Zeta-Jones.
Catherine Zeta-Jones would be a good Madam Mask.
She would. She's never going to do TV.
No. But, honestly, look at all the crazy people who Marvel has worked with. But I only mean it as a sample. Who I think. That's kind of the age and sort of type I would
get me the that. ABC television equivalent of Catherine Zeta-Jones.
Thank you. Yes.
Sofia Vergara.
Yeah. Maybe not.
All right. Last bit of one bit of video game news. I don't know if you guys watched this trailer, the Lego Marvel Avengers trailer.
No.
It looks like fun. The Lego. One of the things I loved about Lego Marvel was it was a big open world, and they had tons of characters.
Yep.
Well, this seems to be basically the Marvel Cinematic equivalent of that. Mm-hmm. It is the story. The storyline involves not just Avengers, but Avengers, Avengers 2, Winter Soldier, Iron Man 3, all those characters, all these stories translate into Lego.
Huh.
So you've got the Hulkbuster fight and all this kind of stuff. And it is, I'm sure, going to have...
Is it like an adaptation of the sort of the best stuff?
It seems to be a mix. Basically, you play through all of that stuff, and then I'm sure it's a big open world thing as well.
Yeah, the original content. Yeah.
And they'll have, I'm sure, every possible add-in character. Like Ant-Man will be in there, all that kind of stuff. Right. So, kind of cool. It almost feels limited compared to how wide open Marvel event, like Marvel Lego was.
But, you know, you have to imagine that they're probably just going to... It may just be as open, but just for the cinematic universe, or it's like you'll be able to walk around the entire helicarrier, and it's not just going to be like, you know, a few places, but like the whole helicarrier.
Well, I know that didn't. I mean, I think they've said like Squirrel Girl is in it, and some other people. So I think
she hasn't been in the movies.
No, so I think they are bringing in some.
This is a tease. She will be in the Marvel Cinematic Universe,
a Lego version of a hypothetical Marvel Cinematic Universe Squirrel Girl.
Oh, and Lady Thor is going to be in it. So clearly, they're going to be doing.
Yeah, they're going to be doing.
But I wonder if they'll put in like Spider-Gwen and Spider-Woman and some of those characters.
Yeah, seems possible.
Yeah, but that's kind of cool. Anyway, it's a fun trailer. Go check it out. And lastly, there's a bit of movie news, which I'm sure you all have heard numerous conspiracy theories about, which is that they announced that they're going to do an Ant-Man sequel, Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Yay.
It is official. It is going to be in, I believe, 2017. I'm not sure because my site just died that I pulled it up on.
It fits into phase three.
Yes, but the resulting thing is it has moved some stuff around. Yes. So, for example, Inhumans has been delayed possibly indefinitely. There's rumors about that.
There is, but we don't know anything for sure. It just doesn't have a date anymore. The ones that did get moved back were Captain Marvel and Black Panther,
which has led to some people to be like, hey, why did you put another movie with a couple of white people? And the female-led movie and the African-American-led movie are both now delayed. Which I understand where people are coming from, but I think it's probably better to wait, take your time, get the movie done right.
Yeah.
I mean, by all means, they've got the director for Black Panther. Did they lead cast in Black Panther?
Yes. He's already. Black Panther's going to, I think, show up in Civil War.
Yeah.
That's where he first appears.
And so I think this is probably overall a good thing, unless you didn't like Ant-Man, in which case, sorry, there's more Ant-Man coming.
And you're crazy. Ant-Man was great.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see,
Evangeline Lilly?
Yeah, I actually really liked her as Wasp.
I did too.
She had a great charisma with why am I blanking on
Paul Rudd?
Paul Rudd, God.
Yeah, she and Paul Rudd had great chemistry. I think that they're going to make a good team. I think that'll be a lot of fun. And they're going to show, or at least Paul Rudd, Ant-Man, will show up in the Civil War beforehand. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's kind of fun. It's also interesting to me because Marvel has been laying out these big phase designs of here's the movies, here they're going to be, here's everything we're going to do until 2020. And I like that they're still flexible enough to say, you know what, we're going to move things around because this works and we're still working on script for other things. I like that they're not tied to it.
Well, because when they announced the Ant-Man and Wasp, they announced three other movies.
Yeah,
they
didn't, unnamed.
Unnamed.
Yeah.
But one could guess, you know, Doctor Strange 2.
Yeah.
A lot of sequels. And we know now more, a little bit more about Thor, Ragnarok.
Yeah. But the thing is, all of these things are flexible. Like, they announce all this stuff, but they all know that, like, you know, if Doctor Strange flops, Doctor Strange 2 will get canceled and something else will take its place.
Yep, right. It's a fairly realistic approach.
Yeah. But yeah, so I think that's generally all good stuff, and looking forward to more Marvel movies, as always.
Slightly related thing, I don't think this is on our list, but it's a minor thing, the new Jessica Jones show stuff.
Yeah.
They've had a few more little teaser trailers that have just had some voiceovers from David Tennant's villainous Purple Man or whatever they end up
Kilgrave,
yeah. And I'm definitely warming to it. Just seeing what's her name, Kristen Ritter,
yeah.
Yeah, in the role, even just catching some glimpses, hearing some scary David Tennant.
I'm just rewatching a bunch of Veronica Mars, and I got to season two where the Kristen Ritter's character is introduced, and she plays this kind of teeny boppy airhead kind of character, and to see her play that and Jessica Jones.
Go to burnout case Jessica Jones.
Well, if you watch Don't Trust the Bee in Apartment 23, she's a totally different character there.
Which means she's very adaptable to whatever.
And she's also in Breaking Bad and plays a very different character.
And we know that the first episode was shown during New York Comic Con.
Yep, seems to have gotten
rave reviews.
Yeah, some people really like it. I'm trying to avoid finding out too much about it, but seems like people liked it.
Just knowing that people liked it.
People liked it, yeah.
It's going to set expectations too high. It's going to crash and burn. But the minor teasers I've seen have me kind of pumped for it now.
Yep. Yep, I'm looking forward to it as well. That'll be coming up sooner than we know. It's in November, right?
It's the end of November, I think.
Yeah.
22nd?
So. Yep.
Well, you know, Thanksgiving, you know, it's a day off.
Sit down with a full turkey and watch a full season of Jessica Jones.
I'm sure my wife will go for that.
Yep. All right, we'll be back in just a moment to talk about this week's comics. All right, we're talking comics for the week of Wednesday, October 14th, and it's another big week. Lots of new number ones, lots of new Marvel stuff.
You know, I have still not read everything from last week that I want to. I believe there's a good half dozen books that I want, not just kind of want to read, but really want to read. Like I never got around to reading last week the Star Wars Shattered Empire, which is a series I've been digging, and the third issue is out this week. It's coming up crazy.
Basically, what Dave is saying is we're behind.
I know. Well, I'm just overwhelmed by the sheer number of issues.
You know what, Dave? It sounds like you don't have a commitment to comics. That's what it sounds like to me.
You're reading about my commitment to
I am, yes.
Motion comics.
So
Donnie Darko aside there.
Yes. Nick, let's start with your stuff.
Oh, my God.
Since you're going to cheat and pick like 100 books.
Yeah, I am.
Nick is doing something crazy.
So for a major, I'm going to break from our normal thing and talk about two comics at once.
Right. Now, you might say, oh, that's cheater picks. They do that all the time. You're calling these a tie, and you're also going to have a cheater pick.
That's true.
I believe, if I understand correct.
The two that I will talk about this moment are Marvel books. They're new number ones. They're both team books, and they're both Avenger books.
Right. So they do share a certain pedigree, making it just slightly less cheater.
Slightly less. Yeah.
We're watching you, Nick.
Yes. The first one I'm going to talk about is the new Avengers, which is Al Ewing and Gerardo Sandoval.
It's a weird team.
It is a weird team. No, but they are doing a team run by Roberto Sunspot.
Right, the new mutant.
Who has purchased AIM.
Right. He always had like a wealthy family involved with the Hellfire Club.
Yes, and I think he basically decided to use it for good instead of Hellfire Club evil.
Right.
And
I always appreciate people who do that.
Bought AIM and turned it into Avengers Idea Mechanics.
So right, which used to be Advanced Idea Mechanics is their...
Exactly, so now they have a live on an island that is an artificial island in international waters. And they respond to whatever crisis needs that they find.
What connects them to the Avengers? Like, what led the Avengers to allow them to have a franchise name?
No one is allowing them to do anything. They are sort of their own entity.
Okay, so they kind of said, we're an Avengers kind of group.
Yeah, uh-huh.
And because they kind of work a little... He's a little duplicitous or...
Yeah, and then they've got some random people from all over across the Marvel Universe.
It's an interesting team. What do we got?
So we've got Squirrel Girl. And Tippy Toe, because you can't have one without the other.
You can.
She seems like a weird fit for that team, but let's go through the team first.
White Tiger.
Yep.
The new Power Man, which I forget his name.
Oh, I forgot he was still around.
Hulkling and Wiccan.
Yep.
And Songbird.
Yep.
And the sort of known Avenger, Hawkeye.
I was going to say, with the exception of Hawkeye, none of those people are actually Avengers.
Squirrel Girl was kind of an Avenger.
She was like the nanny for...
And two of them were young Avengers.
And yes. Songbird is an Avenger in the future.
But it does sound like this is one of those... I mean, we know that they essentially... The Avengers is a franchise, but it very much sounds like... Well, this is kind of a little... Not a covert team, but that they're kind of... They're doing their own thing.
You know what?
I would have probably called it Avengers Idea Mechanics or something along.
Or the New Warriors, because it's more that.
Yeah.
I don't know if people are going to turn up for a new Warriors.
And that's why it's not called the New Warriors.
Yeah. But basically, this is the new team, which is very much new. They're still sort of finding their groove with one another. They're still trying to get to understand each other because White Tiger is not really understanding who Squirrel Girl is and what her powers are. Mm-hmm. And
I don't know if anybody...
I don't understand what her powers are, and I love her book.
That's true.
Wiccan is sort of... at odds with his own powers at the moment, but it's all kind of fun. It's played pretty straight.
What the threat is?
It's kind of an odd threat. In Paris, apparently, there is a group of individuals being replaced with diamond-headed alien type things. People are being replaced with that
old... hacky trope.
Pretty sure Steve Gerber wrote that at some point.
Yeah, now it sounds more like the Defenders.
There is an ultimate threat that they're going to be up against that I don't want to spoil.
Okay.
but it's also it's the away team dealing with that, and then sort of Dum Dum Dugan showing up onto Avengers Island, sort of to investigate and sort of see what they're all about.
Not like it's investigate like a ninja, but to like walk up and say, "What are you doing?"
Yeah, pretty much. The shield is coming up to them and be like, "Okay, we don't trust you, but we know you're filled with a bunch of good guys. So what are you doing?"
And it's, I would imagine Hawkeye seems like, even though he's kind of always been a little rebellious, he's like the status quo guy. Like the guy that I feel like would vouch for him if anybody's gonna.
Yeah, and it is kind of jokey, and it is sort of got that fun nature to it. Which I was impressed with. There's some great tech, of course. If you're going to have an AIM type organization, you're going to have fun,
right? So they took over an AIM base.
Sunspot owns AIM.
Oh, okay, right. So they have access.
They have access to all the advanced ideas.
Yeah.
So they have like cloaking belts and flight belts and, you know, just kind of fun stuff.
That sounds kind of interesting. I will probably give this a read and give it a try.
But, you know, the threat is interesting. The characters get to use their powers in unique ways, which I'm always a fan of.
They match pretty well as a team.
They do, actually. There's no silly kind of at each other's throats. They're working as a team, which I like to see. Mm-hmm. The art is... Cinnabon is not my favorite artist in the world. I think... I might have preferred somebody else.
Who's the artist we equate him with, like, a slightly more exaggerated version?
He's Joe Madureira-esque, is who he's like.
Yeah, very much
it
that.
It is a little bit heightened, and it's a little maybe, like, too heightened for us overall.
Yeah,
it's
very manga-esque.
Like, he's got some talent, though.
He does have talent.
There's some basic talent. There's also a little Greg Capullo in there.
Yeah, I can see that.
But overall, it was a really, really good book. Okay. I'm excited to see where this goes further. The other team book that I'm going to quickly talk about is Uncanny Avengers number 1, which this is the team that is...
Which they should have called Deadpool and the Avengers.
No, because he's not the leader.
That tells him to assemble.
He's the sales leader.
I mean, for all intents and purposes, Rogue is the leader.
Oh, right. This is a continuation of the Uncanny Avengers that was the Unity
basically
team.
The Rick Remender...
The one that came out of after X-Men versus Avengers, where it was going to have both Avengers and mutants together, chilling out, being peaceful. Yeah.
But this one also adds in Inhumans, right?
This adds in Inhumans because, the core team is Human Torch, Rogue, Brother Voodoo, Quicksilver, Spider-Man, Old Man Steve Rogers.
I love that that's
his name,
that.
Yeah.
That works.
And a new Inhuman character named Synapse. And, of course, Deadpool.
You know, that sort of fits for sort of the Unity team. Although, I do have to ask, what made somebody think Deadpool is a good unifier?
Yeah.
We don't exactly know. The only thing about the book is that for some reason, Steve Rogers has vouched for him.
Like, there's something he thinks he will be helpful with.
Yes.
Or something.
And
Old Man Steve Rogers might be a little senile.
Not every team member likes the decision. In fact, a lot of them are at odds with the decision. Mm-hmm. Some don't even want him there. So it's kind of interesting. I will say the it opens with sort of a threat that they're dealing with, which is not a big spoiler. They're actually going up against an Adaptoid, which I thought was very cool.
Yeah.
And then kind of goes
from... overall tone, by the way?
It's light, but, you know, just sort of... It's a classic team book, I felt. I mean, you get them with a new secret lair. There's also actually a lot of the new world building that for the Marvel Universe, the new Marvel Universe after Secret Wars, which I was surprised about, because it touches on sort of
I didn't think they were going to discuss this too much in their early issues.
It sort of touches on what the status of mutants are, because you have Rogue there. And they talk about sort of this new virus that's going around.
Right, which we've heard about through kind of the rumor mill.
There's
and
that.
Stuff.
You know, a few other things that I was like, oh, that's kind of interesting. Deadpool status in this new Marvel world.
Uh-huh.
I really do like their new base. This is very cool.
Everybody's getting new bases, whether it's Advanced Idea Mechanics or these guys.
Yep. And everybody gets a moment, which I'm always a fan of in team books. Everybody gets something, a time to be cool. Jerry Dugan is writing this, so he does a really good job with it. And Ryan Stegman, he's trying something new out on art. His art is a little more Madureira style as well, kind of.
Yeah.
It's, they're...
Almost,
Their arms and legs are a little elongated and kind of bony.
A little Kelly Jones-ish.
Yeah. A little Kelly Jones. That's more in line with what I'm thinking.
Who's it? Kyle Hotz is another artist.
Yeah.
I feel like there's a little bit of commonality in there. And Kyle Hotz himself was like a slightly reined in Kelly Jones.
Yeah.
But there's also going to be a main villain in this one, and I'm not. It's a new one. It's actually an inhuman turned bad. So, which is kind of a fun idea. Really enjoyed it. I am liking this new Marvel universe, and pretty much every Marvel book that's hit so far, I've enjoyed. So,
yeah, it's a good start. Okay,
Randy.
So my pick is Spider-Man 2099, number one. Which is Peter David doing another relaunch of this book. Basically, he did Spider-Man 2099 before Spider-Verse.
Right.
And before Secret Wars. Then he did Secret Wars 2099, which also had Miguel O'Hara, who is Spider-Man 2099. But it also introduced a new team of, like, Avengers and Defenders. Mm-hmm. And now the new series, status quo, is that Miguel O'Hara, formerly Spider-Man 2099, has given up his identity and is running the New York branch of Parker Industries.
Right, which was glimpsed in last week's issue of Amazing Spider-Man, which kind of had a good little short that previewed.
Yeah, so basically Miguel he's wanting to get back to his future, but they have this portal they can go and look through, and he can look for like an hour, and it seems like 2099 has gone all post-apocalyptic. And he's trying to figure out what he needs to do to fix the future back to where it was, so he can go home. In the meantime, he's living in this...
I thought it was interesting that he's able to visit the future in short bursts.
Yeah.
See if, like, you know, how's it doing? How's the future coming along?
And it's not good.
Not good.
And so he is living in our time period, and has a new girlfriend, and this opens with him going on American Ninja Warrior.
It's kind of great.
And it's a great opening sequence. It's really fun and sort of shows – it's a good way to show sort of how physically adept he is and how sort of super confident he is about this stuff right now. And basically he is refusing to become Spider-Man again. He's saying, look, you've got Silk, you've got Miles – we've got plenty of spider people running around. I'm just going to run my company and keep my life out of danger. And in the meantime, there's this thing going on that's been building since early in Slott's run. There's a new super prison being built, and there's sort of a contract dispute between Parker Industries and Alchemax and this new group and all this kind of thing. And they introduced the notion of super terrorism in here, and that pays off pretty big at the end with a surprisingly dark turn that I'm not sure I'm on board with, because the rest of the book is so light and fun.
Right.
But it's probably motivation to get him back in the Spider-Man costume, which makes sense.
Right. Peter David is known to sometimes pull the rug out from under readers, so we're not even 100% sure that what we're seeing is what we're right. seeing.
There's also... So you never see him in the costume that's on the cover, the new costume. You don't actually see him in that in this issue. But there's plenty of action and stuff in there, and there's great character interaction. There's also a little one-page nod... there's a character that he meets working at Parker Industries that nods back to Secret Wars 2099 in an interesting way. So there's a lot going on in here. If you've been following this series before, picks up nicely. If you haven't been, real easy to jump into. And I'm really digging it. The Spider-Man universe, to me, is the strongest part of the Marvel universe right now.
I agree. It's the one that Bendis hasn't touched yet.
Oh.
Show us on the Marvel universe where Bendis touched it. What I was going to say is, yeah, I did not follow Spider-Man 2099 in the 90s, but I had read one of, I came in on like one of the previous Peter David, the previous one.
Yeah, the previous series,
what was it, a year or two back?
Yeah.
And found that I was able to jump in easily. I liked Miguel as a character, and Peter David is just, he's in particular, a relentlessly readable writer.
Yeah,
he's
yeah.
just like always fun repartee. But also sort of different approaches to story angles and stuff like that.
Yeah.
He's good.
And the art is by Will Sliney, who does nice stuff. Dave, your pick, I believe, is the pick that all three of us would have picked this week.
Right. I stole it because I'm mean. It's another... Our first round picks are all Marvel books again this week. We're really pouring it out for them.
Yeah, yep.
And they're putting out the good stuff.
And I'm shamed by it. But I'm going to, like, my secondary cheater pick will be not Marvel.
Yep.
So this is the first issue of the new Captain America. Full title is Captain America Sam Wilson, a.k.a. the Falcon. If you've never read any comics with Falcon in it, then you've probably seen Winter Soldier, and at least you know that Falcon is an awesome
guy. Yep.
This was not one that was on my radar at all, because the writer, Nick Spencer, is not a guy whose writing style I've plugged into before. He's usually a little bit too, like, I would say on the snarky edge of things.
Yeah.
Or like a little tongue-in-cheek with his writing.
And I think he'll be exercising that in Astonishing Ant-Man. And
yeah.
Right, right. Yeah, and he's been doing, yeah, like, he's done the Ant-Man book, and what was the other thing he wrote? The Spider-Man villains.
Oh,
Superior Foes.
Superior Foes of Spider-Man.
See, here's the interesting thing. Of the bunch of us here, I think I'm the biggest Nick Spencer fan.
It's probably.
Because I like Superior Foes, I like his Ant-Man, and I actually like Morning Glories, his Image book. So. Yeah.
So this was not on my radar, but he came through.
Yeah.
and the issue is actually, it's straightforward, but you know, you said something earlier, Randy, when we had just finished reading it, that you were talking about how it's got a point of view.
Yeah.
And it's a political point of view.
Yeah.
That shows up later on in the issue. And it's you know, it acknowledges that it's going to be a little bit volatile for some people.
Yeah.
Because Sam, I'll quick start at the beginning. He seems like he's having a little bit of a rough go in the role as Cap now. And, you know, he's been Cap for, what, a year or two?
Right, and he was working with S.H.I.E.L.D.
But he's a little bit on the outs with S.H.I.E.L.D. But at the same time, he's putting together kind of a cool team of allies, which includes Misty Knight, who I love.
Yep.
She was so cool in, like, Heroes for Hire a few years ago, and she's always been a fun character.
And there's, like, there seems to be sort of a romantic flirtation going on with the two of them.
I think it's more...
You think they're actually romantic?
He said something in there, he's like, things got a little complicated, and I'm like, okay, yeah, they're at least, at the very least, I feel like probably friends with benefits.
Yep.
And...
But more importantly...
D-Man.
Yeah!
The Demolition Man. A character who has not gotten a lot of respect in the last decade or so, but who was from Mark Gruenwald's Cap run back in the late 80s,
yeah.
I guess, was a... how was it described?
He was a rich former superhuman class wrestler.
Yeah.
Idolized Cap.
Who got powers from the Power Broker.
The Power Broker, yeah. Like many of the superpowered wrestlers.
Yep.
And then, you know, he supposedly died during that run, came back and was like mentally damaged and was a homeless superhero. Then he went into the military and was like their veteran superhero. They haven't
known what to do with him.
Yeah.
But I actually loved the quick recap of him in this.
Yeah.
It actually sounded like a life in a way, but in a quick way. There's some point when Sam is just summing him up and he said, you know, he talks about his like wrestling past. And then he said, he's like, you know, he dealt with some rough stuff a few years ago. You know, homeless, some mental illness issues.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, by kind of those individual stories I didn't particularly like back in the day, but as just mentioned as kind of like glossed over, I'm like, okay, that sounds kind of like he's been through some rough stuff.
Yeah.
And that works out all right for his character. But both he and Misty Knight are really fun supporting characters.
Yep.
And let's see, what's going on? There's a confrontation with,
Crossbones,
which is a cool little showdown between them. And, fairly early on in it, you see, although, they kind of cleverly don't show precisely what he says, but you know what he says.
Yeah.
You see him sort of trying to assess what he should be as Captain America. He's like, am I a symbol?
Yeah.
Do I need to be something more than a symbol? You know, do I need to actually be out there? And this is kind of what he's chosen. He's like, I need to be out kind of on the ground floor doing stuff.
Yeah.
He does not have like this like super great funding right now.
Right.
But he opts to do, can we say about what he sort of does is to kind of get in touch with people?
Yes, yeah.
Because it's another callback to Gruenwald's thing, but in a way that doesn't feel like slavish devotion. It's more like, that was a neat idea, and now's the time to revisit it. And the idea is that he's got a hotline in which people who have problems can give him a call.
Which leads to one of my favorite parts of the book, the big two-page spread of people calling him with the stupidest minor problems that they want Captain America to come solve for them.
It reminded me of a bit that in the first issue of Concrete, you know, otherwise much more kind of realistic comic.
Yeah.
But he goes on what was then the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, and says, "Hey, I've got this weird new giant body. You know, I don't know if I should, you know, go adventuring, lend myself to causes. What should I do, people of America?" And the first Concrete short story ever was him answering the mail he got from that, and it's a combination of like a little bit hilarious and heartbreaking.
Yeah,
and this issue has some of that. I don't want to quite say what he ends up going with, but that's the more serious side of the book. As is his reconnecting with his brother, a character
none of us were familiar with.
His name is Gideon, and he's He's like a minister, right?
Yeah.
But apparently has also had superpowers before, and...
We looked it up. It happened during World War Hulk.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I have some vague memory of the character. I have wondered if he might have been created to sort of... Since that series, or, you know, not too long before that, in Civil War, Giant Man, the African-American...
Yeah.
...had been killed, and I wonder if they were thinking... And it might be nice to have another black superhero after kind of offing that guy unceremoniously.
Yes, yeah.
I don't know, just something that occurred to me.
Yeah, it's possible.
But I liked the brother, and I feel like giving him a supporting cast that now includes D-Man, Misty Knight, and his brother is a good idea. Just as, on the Flash TV show, giving him all the backup guys, Cisco and everybody, was a cool idea. And the artist on this, Daniel Acuna, really comes through with some really vibrant character art. I feel like these are probably somewhat referencing real people.
Yeah.
But it's in such a way that you're not like, this was traced off of a photo.
No, it's nice.
It just makes it feel real.
It reminds me of the early parts of Civil War that Lionel Francis Hugh was drawing.
Yeah, yeah.
It's got that sort of faux painty look. It's really nice and detailed. Mm-hmm. There's some good character action in it.
Yep.
Good emotions in it. I also want to say, Sam Wilson started out as a social worker. Like,
that's true.
He is super lefty guy, so it makes sense for him to basically be the liberal Captain America.
Yeah, yeah, the guy who's kind of, I'm going to go ahead and just say it.
Yeah, yeah.
I think this issue also just feels very steeped in Captain America. I mean, it's in lore and sort of what...
It has some threats that Cap has dealt with in the past, but have... reconfigured themselves for a new era, and I'll be anxious to read the next issue and see exactly how he's going to take them.
Yeah, Spencer, like I said, the point of view here, Spencer is taking on sort of a political, social, political stories here. He's doing a story based around immigration and racism and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
This is the kind of book the people who complain about social justice warriors in comics, they're going to hate this book. And that makes me love it even more.
Right. And well, what's interesting is the book seems also self-aware about the hatred it's going to evoke. That said, I find I suspect no matter where one's politics are, okay, if you lean hard right, you're not going to like
it.
But I feel like the characters are going to come through.
Yeah. It doesn't get all Judd Winnick on it.
Right.
It's Judd Winnick is one of those guys who can be so super left that you basically just feel like he's banging you over the head with his point.
You're like, instead I wish this guy wasn't on my team.
Instead of telling you a story. Spencer's telling a story and having fun with it, along with the social and political stuff he's
saying.
There's
lots of character interaction. There's some good humor in the book.
Yeah.
And some good action, too. So I am more interested in the character than I was a year or two ago.
Me too.
When they first debuted him, even though they had beautiful Stuart Eminem art.
Yeah.
But I felt like, maybe it didn't quite have a voice.
Yeah.
And honestly, I read there was an article that hit a few months ago that I agreed with somewhat. There was an article from sort of like, I don't know, like a feminist blog or something like that was critiquing Marvel's new female characters.
Yeah.
Some not saying that they were bad, but just that they lacked teeth a little bit. They didn't have the flaws that sometimes people associate with, Peter Parker kind of, perpetually late and all that. And,
sure.
Can't get his life in order. Wolverine, dangerous and edgy. It's like the male characters sometimes get those slightly bigger flaws or are just a little bit more, I don't want to say extreme, but they have a viewpoint that's likely to conspire conflict a little bit more.
Sure.
And I was like, I can see that criticism of some of these characters, even though I don't think that it's like wholly fair to characters like Ms. Marvel
or Spider-Woman for that matter.
But I got the point, and I think that what this does is it gave him a point of view and gave him a little bit more edge. You know, whether you like him or like this sort of new approach or not,
yeah,
it makes him stand out in a way he kind of wasn't before in the... Who was writing it?
Remender.
In the Remender series.
Yeah,
so,
I agree.
Anyway, anxious to see where it's going. I for sure recommend trying it out.
Yeah, I was really happy with this first issue, and I was not expecting to like it this much.
Nick, shall we jump to your tertiary cheat?
No, Dave, go ahead and do your cheater pick first.
Okay. From Vertigo is a new book called Twilight Children. It's written by Gilbert Hernandez, the... famous underground cartoonist who did worked on Love and Rockets with the Hernandez brothers, and with stunning artwork by Darwin Cook.
Yeah,
what was the last thing Darwin Cook did in comics?
Probably the Parker novels. I think was the last thing.
Yeah, right. That makes sense.
All those DC covers
and the DC covers.
Now, Twilight Children is sort of a magical realism thing, which I know the Hernandez brothers have kind of worked into their stories before, and. Randy, I just realized, I don't know precisely where this is set.
Is it in Brazil?
It looks like South America.
Yeah, it's in South America.
But, you know, of course, it is all in English, and there's not the giant Jesus statue for me to determine
right, sure.
whether it's in Brazil.
this reminded me of the stuff that Fabio Moon and Gabriel...
I don't see the Jesus statue. How do I know?
The stuff that Fabio Moon and Gabriel Bá do, which is also magical realism and is also often set in Brazil because that's where they're from. And that may be why I jumped to thinking it was in Brazil. Yeah. It's also on a beach. It's got sort of a...
Those opening scenes of just sort of some of the daily life going on are beautiful.
Yeah.
And beautiful coloring. It's not Dave Stewart, is it?
It wouldn't surprise me. Yeah. It is. This is amazing. It's probably the best looking book this week.
Yeah. Anyway, it is a sort of a small town, like borderline, like... I mean, it's a town. It's not a village. And the magical realism, so you have an ensemble cast of characters. There's a philandering wife.
Yep.
I'm trying to think who else we got. Oh, there's an alcoholic, kind of like borderline homeless guy. There's a trio of kids. And the magic realism is like there's these strange glowing orbs that wash up on the beach apparently sometimes. Yeah. That they're treated like, it is weird to them. They're like, oh, it's one of the orbs. I've wanted to see one of these. But, like, kind of nobody knows what they do.
Yeah, they're not terrified of them. They're just curious.
And they're like, oh, their government's probably going to come look into this. And, but the sort of, that stuff seems, is used to bring out the characters.
Yeah.
There's a mystery building clearly involving that, but it's also about just sort of, you know, where it takes these characters in their personal lives and their intertwining relationships.
Yeah.
I wasn't like 100% sold on this, but there's definitely enough going on to make me want to read a few more issues and see where it's headed.
That's where I was too. It's kind of I didn't love it, but then the more I think about it, the more I'm like, it was really engaging, and yeah, I like the characters and the art is gorgeous. So I'll definitely stick around for more.
Is it a miniseries, Randy, or an?
It's
ongoing?
An ongoing.
Okay, so yeah, like I mean, you know, for any number of reasons, it's worth checking out if you're just kind of looking for a dramatic series that also delves a little into the surreal. If you like Darwin Cook's art.
If you like the Lunar Brothers stuff, I think. Especially if you like Girls or some of that stuff.
Yeah, I think that's a good comparison.
It's really an unusual book and hard to describe, but I wound up liking it too.
Cool. Nick?
All right. My tertiary pick, as you say, is The Fun I Hate Fairyland, which is essentially if Dorothy got trapped in Oz and she didn't want to be there. She hated it.
But this is all, it's Scotty Young's image book.
It is newest image book. But yeah, it's basically her getting trapped in an Oz-like place that's sugar-coated candy land.
And like years past.
And she doesn't get any older physically.
Nope.
But mentally she's in her 30s and she's had it with the talking suns, with the little elf people, with the sentient candy. All of it just
mushroom
annoys the crap
people.
Out of her, and so she basically just shoots it all the time.
And it may be like also a little bit meta on the level of Scotty Young, who has been known for drawing the cutesy characters, who drew the Wizard of Oz comics for years for Marvel. His like, okay, I'm done.
Yeah.
So he gets to destroy it all.
Yes.
And there's a little more to it than that. I mean, there's definitely sort of her need to get out of here. The sort of the witch who kind of controls everything doesn't really care for her anymore, but she can't outright kill her.
Yeah, she's not allowed to kill her because that's outside the rules of the fairy tale.
Exactly.
Are there any other other characters, or is it mainly just her?
I mean, she visits a lot of different places that all are sort of inhabited by kind of weird. There's a slug.
It's not like an ensemble cast book.
No, it's basically her and a guy, a little like Jiminy Cricket type character.
To say she has some kind of
that got stuck with her.
Yeah.
And is trying to guide her through fairyland with a map that they have.
I have a question. Like, is her guide also kind of like, is he still all chipper and like, hey, turn that frown upside down?
Not really. He's kind of just been with her for so long, so he's kind of tired as well.
Okay.
But
yeah.
Still trying to help, and because he's part of this world, and he's not like outright evil or anything.
Right.
It is. I found it very hilarious. There are some great gags and one-off jokes, so I was very pleased with it. It was better than I expected.
And if you get in quick enough, the original title of this book, I Hate Fairyland, was going to be Fuck Fairyland.
That's true.
And Scotty Young was, I believe, convinced by Image that was going to be a hard sell and might cut down on his audience. But at the Image Retailer Expo, we basically were all like, no, you have to do a retailer variant of that. So there are a few variant covers that have Fuck Fairyland on the title.
That's right.
True.
You could be one of the few to have that in your collection.
Yeah.
This sounds like a book that's both good for people who like fairy stories and who hate fairy stories.
Yes, yeah. So my book is another unexpected one. It's another Image book. It's a Top Cow book, and it is by Stefan Sejic, who you might know from some Autumn Rat Queens, most notably from his works on Sunstone.
It's been everywhere lately, including internet cartoons, which become sort of memes and get passed all around Facebook.
This guy's a very talented writer-artist, and... he left Rat Queens after a couple issues to do his new book. And the book he chose to do is basically, it's this book called Switch. It's Switch number one. And it is a re-envisioning of the Top Cow universe, Darkness, Angelus, and Witchblade. And my thought when I heard that was like, that's what you're going to do with all your talent, is focus in on these sort of, these properties that I've never found very interesting. But what happened is, I read it, and it's really good. It's about this sort of teenage girl who's very similar to your, Kamala Khans and your Spider-Gwens. She's a sort of a outsider teenage girl. She's dealing with, liking boys and all the other stuff as a burgeoning teenage girl. And then she gets involved with the Witchblade, which is this ancient weapon that started out as a weapon that a cavewoman had. And then it was born of this is, again, he's sort of re-envisioning this as a ground up. Like, if you've never read the Witchblade Darkness stuff, you don't have to. This is not
right. This
is not canon. This is a new canon.
This is ground floor.
So basically, it's these two forces, the force of darkness and the force of light, the Angelus. They had a baby of sorts that is the Witchblade. This is this weapon that can only be wielded by powerful women. And it goes on down through the ages. And basically, then we're introduced to this new girl. She has a classmate who she used to be friends with, who is named Estacado, which, if you know the darkness, that's the last name of the bloodline that bears the darkness. He's under attack by the Angelus because they're trying to stop the bearer of the darkness. And as this all comes together, things happen, and our protagonist winds up being the wielder of the Witchblade.
That sounds kind of cool. Randy, she is... I assume when she gets the Witchblade, it's not like in the regular Witchblade, the old Witchblade comics, where she becomes half naked.
No, she just has the Witchblade on her.
Comic, probably something to get us arrested.
Yep, nope. She's actually just wearing a t-shirt and stuff, and has a Witchblade.
Is this? I'm curious. Is this a young adult book, or is this more like teens and up kind of thing?
I would say teens and up. It is definitely. It's not Sunstone.
Right. Is there any swearing?
There's not much swearing. This is definitely a PG-13 sort of, with the level of what Marvel and DC tend to do. If you're comfortable giving your kid Captain Miss Marvel, you could be comfortable giving them a Switch.
Okay. Well, when I was flipping through it, I saw that page you were talking about where they mentioned like the lineage of other people women who've had the Witchblade.
Yeah.
And if I'm not mistaken, it was kind of like this almost Buffy-like thing where you saw like all these women from different eras who had it, and they sort of like had been heroines in different time periods.
Yeah, I think that the Buffy is a good comparison. It's definitely drawing on that sort of female empowerment, the chosen one kind of thing.
So whereas I would say that mostly the audience for Witchblade and stuff traditionally was horny 20-somethings and 30-somethings, 40-somethings, this might actually kind of be targeted at the... say somewhat at least at the age of the character.
You
go to teens as well as the normal audience.
Yeah, I think so. And like I say, it's beautifully rendered. If you've seen Sedgwick's artwork, this is really nice stuff from him.
To read it, always good to see some options for teen heroes.
I was not expecting this to rank so highly on my picks this week, but I wound up really liking it.
His art kind of goes a long way towards that. He's really good.
All right. So also on the stack this week, and it is a big week. Miss Marvel number 19 finishes up the last days of Miss Marvel, where the last issue had a big reveal with her and her mom. This follows up on that, and also this is basically how a superheroine handles the end of the world, and it's got some nice character moments with her, some of her friends, some of her sort of former enemies, all her family, her sort of crush, her brother. It's really sweet, effective stuff. Makes me love this book. If I hadn't already picked Miss Marvel so many weeks, this would absolutely be my pick of the week. I really loved it. There's a new Radioactive Spider-Gwen number one, which basically is more continuation of the Spider-Gwen story. So it's same creative team, deals with her father and what he, you know, what he's doing now that he doesn't want to hunt his daughter as Spider-Gwen anymore. Reintroduces the Lizard, who is a major villain in this world, and introduces a new version of another character at the end.
Interesting. Okay.
So there's also Blood Feud number one, which is a sort of southern urban southern vampire story by Cullen Bunn, who you might know from Hellbreak and Six Gun. Has a little bit of that Joe Lansdale True Blood feel to it. Some nice art. The third issue of Star Wars Shattered Empire, which has some great stuff and a Lando guest appearance. Really enjoying that book. Strange Fruit number two finally comes out. This is the controversial book about a giant black alien that crashes in the middle of a Reconstruction South.
Yep.
And what happens then? Beautifully rendered, interesting second issue on that. 13th issue of Sex Criminals, which introduced their first asexual character, which was a really interesting sort of one-off issue.
That's sort of, that's somewhat notable because that's an idea that's really only entered the public consciousness, I would say, in the last 5, maybe 10 years tops. And but it seems like a group that is sort of finding its voice, and so it's kind of that's cool to see them addressing it.
Yeah, and then Star Trek Green Lantern number four, which is a lot more of various lanterns fighting in Star Trek universe.
Yeah. I believe the Black Lanterns may take a hand in this.
Yep,
but we're guessing that they're gonna. I think based on the preview stuff, they may resurrect the Vulcan race.
There's also three graphic novels I want to mention this week. The new Battling Boy prologue of Fall of the House of West. By Paul Pope, J.T. Petty, and David Rubin. I love Paul Pope's artwork, but Rubin's stuff is really good.
It is.
And the previous Rise of Aurora West was really, really good. So I'm looking forward to digging into that. The hardcover of Wayward, the basically sort of a Japanese Buffy, essentially, that Image Comics has been doing. Jim Zub is writing. Stephen Cummings is doing really beautiful art. This collects, I believe, the first 10 issues. All the little essays about the yokai, the various Japanese demon. Character sketches.
Oh, wow, look how much stuff there is.
Tons of variant covers. It is a beautiful volume and a book I really love and I know our staffer T Love really loves.
Yep.
And then finally, the thing that probably would have been my pick if I was picking graphic novels, Graphic Inc., the DC Comics Art of Darwin Cook, which is a big, like, 400-page book. It's like $40, but it's got all the Darwin Cook variant covers, covers he's done from various DC books, little stories he's done everywhere from Jonah Hex to one-shots in various Vertigo books, just all kinds of Darwin Cook written and drawn stuff. If you are a Darwin Cook fan like me, and that'd be hard because I'm one of the biggest Darwin Cook fans in the world.
But if you're even in that spectrum.
It's so good. I'm always nervous when they do these books, they're going to screw them up. This looks great. I'm really excited to dig in and read it.
You know, I was thinking, like, Would all of us put Darwin Cook in, like, say, our top five artists?
He's absolutely in my top five.
Like, living artists?
Yeah.
And, like, even if I don't like every project he does, I'm like, his art is impeccable.
Yeah.
It's just the best.
Yeah.
To the point that I'd say, like, you know, I initially kind of thought of him as, like, I'm like, oh, I love Bruce Timm, and I like this new guy, Darwin Cook, who's kind of in the same style. Of course, they both kind of came up through Batman the Animated Series, Darwin Cook more through Batman Beyond.
Right, right.
But I would have to say, as far as, like, if I was going to get comic art between the two of them, I want Cook.
Yeah, yeah. Darwin Cook has outstripped Bruce Timm for me.
He's somewhat eclipsed Bruce Timm. Yeah. Bruce Timm is a friggin' legend.
Yeah, I agree.
Nick, what else is in your stack?
I have the first issue of the new Guardians of the Galaxy book. It is Bendis still writing the book, but we have Kitty Pryde and The Thing stepping into the team.
You said good first issue?
I actually did. I think it was a really good first issue that sets up the status quo, tells you what Peter Quill's doing, and puts out a new threat. So I'm curious. The finale of the Civil War, Secret Wars book, which I will say had a great finale and makes me want to buy the trade when it comes out.
It was a good ending.
The third issue of the Deadpool versus Thanos crossover that Tim Seeley is writing, that's fantastic. The 45th issue of Batman. God, 45 issues?
Yeah.
So, some big stuff
so
occurs
Scott
on this
Snyder
one.
Might not just be dabbling in Batman.
No. I don't think he's dabbling. The finale to A-Force Secret Wars. I have not read this one yet, but it's the first issue of the Star Wars Chewbacca by Jerry Dugan and art by Phil Noto. Which I'm really excited to read.
Is that a miniseries like
yeah, five issue one? Yeah.
Then there's a trade I'm going to mention because Randy mentioned Stefan Sedgwick's new book Switch. His book Death Vigil comes out in trade paperback this week.
Now, how many people have told us to read that book?
A ton of people.
I need to read that book.
Yeah, I do need to read that book. There is also a freebie that comes out tomorrow that I will highly recommend everyone who buys something picks
up. If you like Marvel.
If you like Marvel. No, I'm just saying, just pick it up.
We have a lot of copies of it, so just take one.
Basically, it's a free with purchase, but it basically runs down a lot of the books of the Marvel Universe, gives you a couple of page samplers of things like, oh, I don't know, Contest of Champions, Spider-Man,
some of the books that have just been
Extraordinary X-Men. New Avengers.
All the books we've just talked about on the podcast.
Unbeatable Squirrel Girl.
But if you want to, if you don't trust us and you want to see something with some pictures, and there's also some like behind the scenes art too, I see it looks like.
There is, but yeah, it basically gives a rundown of books that have hit, are hitting, or are hit in the future.
Or shall hit.
So I highly recommend that one. Dave, what did I miss?
Y'all covered most everything, but I would also add Captain America White number 3 hits. I've really enjoyed those first two issues, so I'm counting on this one to not let me down. And then there's a bit of an oddball one. It's a continuation. DC has 3 books that are sort of spinning off of stuff they did in Convergence, which opened up some past history worlds. This is the Superman, Lois, and Clark, and it follows their sort of further adventures of them after the events of Convergence, which are explicitly referenced in this.
Yeah.
And they've kind of got an unusual thing, new status quo going on. But, you know, essentially, if you're a Superman fan from pre-New 52 or, you know, just want to see some more of that world of, when he and Lois were married before they sort of broke that up, you're going to be able to get that through this.
You know, what's interesting is it reminds me a little bit of the approach in Superman Secret Identity.
Yeah, it is.
It's almost like an undercover Superman.
Right. And I guess, you know, there's no harm in saying it is actually somehow because of the events in Convergence, it seems like, and I didn't remember this, that the Lois and Clark and their kid end up in the current mainline DC universe.
Yeah.
In the New 52, but they're keeping their head below water, although he does still have a big old S on his chest. But it looks like that costume looks more like the black costume he had after the Return of Superman thing. But yeah, there is something of that vibe because they are kind of trying to live a bit of a normal life while occasionally more quietly being superheroes.
Right.
It's written by Dan Jurgens, who of course wrote tons of Superman stuff, including the death of Superman back in the day.
Yep.
With art by Lee Weeks, who's a stunning artist and who did the art on the Convergence Superman that featured these characters.
Right.
And I don't remember the name of this graphic. It's not a graphic novel. It's a book that's out on our shelves. What is that choose your own adventure with a cat thing?
Oh, yeah. It's something like you choose, you are the cat or something.
You are the kitten.
I only mention it because so this looks like one of those old 80s, 70s and 80s choose your own adventure books.
Yep.
I was flipping through it and I was like, oh, you know, like you're a cat in it. Here's something about, you know, licking your own fur and stuff like that. And on the random page I turned to. And then I was like, oh, well, you know, is this like a kid-friendly book? And then I saw like the F-bomb on the opposite page, and I was like, oh, this is like it's kind of a twisted and hilarious thing. It's more okay. Like if Chip Zdarsky did a Choose Your Own Adventure where you were a cat. So it looks pretty messed up in a good way, though. And I forgot to bring it back here because I was like, I want to read a page for the podcast. Anyway, worth checking out, I would imagine, if you're a weird person.
Who likes cats? All right, that about wraps up comics for us. We'll be back in just a few seconds to talk about some TV and some video games. All right, so TV is back.
It is. It continues to be back.
And
TV Go.
I don't know if you guys noticed, but I'm Stephen Amell's best friend now.
You tell your tale of your team up.
So I went in for cancer surgery on last Friday.
Not super cool in and of itself.
No, and it's getting old.
In fact, kind of sucky.
Yeah,
I would imagine.
Third time is not the charm for cancer surgery. It still sucks.
Although, to spoil that, so far it looks good. The results
so far seems okay. Yeah,
seem good.
But I had bought Stephen Amell does a lot of cancer research support. He has a foundation called Fuck Cancer.
Just in the off chance that people don't know who Stephen Amell is, he plays Arrow on the show Arrow.
Does anyone listening to this not know who Stephen Amell is?
You know, I think that like lots of people watching don't know actors' names, like they don't know comic creators' names.
Yeah. Anyway, yes, he is the Arrow. He does a lot of charity work. He has a thing called Fuck Cancer that basically every now and then they do these big drives where you can buy a t-shirt and the money goes to cancer research.
Yep.
So they did this t-shirt that was basically just him. He has it's called the Sin Seriously campaign. That's like a mix-up word that he made.
Yeah.
And so basically it's a picture of his face with a post-it on his head saying, Fuck Cancer, Sin Seriously, Captain Amell.
Right.
And I bought one of those shirts because it was a good cause. And, I mean, I guess it's selfish of me to donate to cancer research.
So selfish, right?
I know. So I have that shirt. And so at 4:30 in the morning when I was getting ready to go to the hospital at the ungodly hour, 4:30 in the morning, I pulled that shirt on.
The worst part of the whole thing.
It was, well, it's up there.
The worst part about having cancer is the early hours.
I took a quick selfie and posted, going to do battle with cancer, but I got green hair on my side, and tagged Stephen Amell because I follow his Facebook page.
Sure.
Figuring nothing would probably come of it, but, you know, he might see it.
Right.
You know? So then I wake up from surgery, and there's all kinds of support messages from friends and that kind of thing. And a little while into it, Stephen Amell shows up.
Right.
And posted and said, hey, you know, we've never met, obviously, but, you know, said some very nice complimentary things. Said, you know, good luck. Let me know how it goes. And then posted a little thumbs up selfie of himself at like a Starbucks.
Yeah.
And then one of my friends, Jason Murphy, posted a sort of side by side on his page of my post and Stephen Amell's comments. And then that sort of went viral. And then there was like a radio station that picked it up.
Yeah, picked up by somebody who does some, I think, like a comic type reporting for him.
So for that day, I was internet famous.
Yep. Stephen Amell, what a class act.
Yeah, that was really nice.
He's already part of, you know, been contributing to like a fantastic cause.
By all accounts, seems to be a really great guy.
Yeah. And just that, you know, that he would take those few extra minutes to kind of, you know, to actually reach out to both a fan and then somebody who's dealing with with what he's, you know, trying to help with.
Yeah.
It's just the coolest thing ever.
Yeah, it was really cool. And it means that I have to be nicer to the Arrow show, which I don't always like. but speaking of, Arrow did start back up.
It did start back up.
With a episode titled Green Arrow. And they did the thing where he and Felicity were living happily out in Coast City.
It was an episode that was better than all of season 3.
I agree. they brought in Neil McDonough as Damian Dark, and he's a great scary bad guy.
He is.
I remember that there was some concern because his name was a little bit silly.
Yeah. Well,
it's a silly name, but we knew Neil McDonough, and we knew what he would bring to the game.
And he does. Yeah. And I love that this power's are mystical.
Yep.
So that they're going to delve into
it. Explicitly
it's
mystical?
Explicitly stated, because they think he's a metahuman, and they're like, no, his powers are mystical.
Right. And you're sure he's not manipulating quantum mechanics?
He is not manipulating quantum mechanics like Doctor Strange.
Constantine is about to show up.
Yeah, and I think that's how they're going to work Constantine in for the season.
It would be nice, you know, to see that kind of more commonly handled, where it's like, just throw it out there. Just accept that there is weird magic stuff in some of these superhero worlds.
There also was a pretty big teaser, like split-second teaser in the beginning of this episode. Did you catch it?
No, I guess I didn't.
In the flashback where he's at the bar.
Yeah.
Did you see the bomber jacket of the guy that they panned past?
No, did they do the Hal thing?
It was Hal Jordan.
Nice. There's a lot of cool stuff in this one.
I don't know what the end game of that is.
I think they introduce Hal Jordan.
I think they're gonna.
I mean, that's crazy. The notion of hitting. I mean, you know, there's a Supergirl show going on. And that's starting up soon.
Yeah.
I would not expect him to hit like that level of powers.
Well, we'll talk about Flash too, because they're definitely one of the things I like about Arrow is that they are sort of going full on DC Universe now. There's all these crossovers between them. Dark is going to cross over into Flash.
Yep.
Dark's guys like the Ghosts are a great villains. Yeah, they're badasses. They're like every other Arrow villain. There's all kinds like Deathstroke had that team of mercenaries.
Yeah.
Everybody comes in and shoots up. There's almost a joke about like, isn't this the fourth mayor they're trying to elect?
Yeah.
Because the mayor keeps getting assassinated and they don't want anybody running for mayor because they're going to get assassinated.
Yeah.
So like basically the city government consists of like her dad, the captain of the police, and
the district attorney
and some other people, and Damian goes after all of them.
Uh-huh.
And basically Diggle and Speedy and Black Canary are there trying to hold the fort down, and they have to go. They basically have to go out and find Arrow and say, "Look, we need your help."
There was some great back and forth between Stephen Amell and I always blank on her name, but the woman who plays Felicity,
Emily Bettencourt.
They have some of the best repartee.
Yeah, they're great.
And the scenes with them, sort of in the Arrow Cave, sort of discussing what they really were wanting to do with their lives, and
yeah,
I were some of the best scenes that I've seen in Arrow.
The big issue I have with Arrow is they do sometimes like to do the angst.
They do.
Him and Dig being on the outs, I don't like, and I want them to resolve that as fast as possible.
Yeah. I mean, literally, just do it in a second in the next episode.
Yeah, just have them say, you know what, I'm cool, and that's it. Because I hated that when they did it. I hate them being on the outs. I get what they're trying to do, but it's not good. It doesn't benefit either actor.
You'd rather get some angsty drama out of some other scenario. Yes.
Well, I mean, they're already got the angsty drama because he was going to propose to Felicity, and now they're not going to do that. And I'm tired of that. Will they? Won't they? Too.
Yeah.
I wish they'd go
angsty drama with Speedy,
and they got the angsty drama, which makes sense. She was in a Lazarus pit, so she's got some issues. But here's the cool thing: he adopts the name Green Arrow because they sort of killed off Arrow. They faked out. They faked the death of Roy Harper as Arrow.
Okay.
And so basically he comes back and says that he acts like basically he's a new hero who's been inspired by him.
Okay.
And he calls himself the Green Arrow and makes sort of the speech to the city.
Oh, that's cool.
And they also, his new costume is designed by Cisco.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. So
they also introduced Cord Industries in this.
Yes, there's a Cord Industries. They also have a train station that is now running a super fast line between Star City and Central City.
Yep.
So they're definitely tying all this stuff together.
They're building a very cohesive entity with this universe. So
yeah, it was a good first episode back. It wasn't like a great one, but it was a solid first episode back.
What did you think of Diggle's costume?
Not great, but not as bad as it looked. Not out of before
it was
you saw
one of those looked better in motion.
Looked better in motion. Yeah,
and I have a similar question. Well, go ahead.
One of my friends noticed that they're all like, you know, we don't kill. But nobody says anything. When Diggle's just blowing people away left and right.
I kind of wanted them to say, yeah, he uses, like, mercy bullets.
But no, he just clearly just kills people.
He just shoots him murder.
Wait a minute. I've only, like, seen, like, the first season or whatever, but I remember him getting on Arrow's case for killing.
Yeah, no, he's just, like, out there with pistols just killing people left and right.
Okay. You know.
They're the bad guys.
So the other thing I was going to say is just in watching internet reactions and stuff, is that there's still flashback stuff, which is clearly a permanent part of the structure.
Yeah.
They
need to get rid of the flashbacks.
I would like them to get rid of the flashbacks.
But they're going back to the island.
They're going back to the island, and they're involving Amanda Waller, and it all sort of makes a bit of sense.
Yeah.
So they weren't horribly bad or anything. You're just like, they probably need to move on.
It's just like, I'd rather, anytime they spend on flashback, I'd rather they spend on time in the current plots.
Right.
Yeah. So Flash. We all watch Flash.
Yeah.
Have we not talked about Flash?
No, we haven't talked about Flash
yet. I guess we've talked about Flash, but we haven't talked about Flash for the show.
I don't think we talked about the first episode back, did we? Because it aired after we recorded. So, Atom Smasher.
Right.
This is the first time they've done growth effects on a show like this that I can think of.
Well, it looked not fantastic.
It was pretty solid.
It looked good.
I thought they did a good job.
Yeah. No, I was pretty happy with that. Overall, I was happy with the episode.
But I think we all thought it felt a little weaker.
Yeah, it would have, like, if it was just dropped in the middle of another season, I'd say, that was a good, solid episode.
Yeah.
Nothing great. I would have wanted a little bit more out of a first episode, ideally. But there are some big developments.
Well, there's a lot of, I think that's why it was weaker. There was a lot of piece moving that had to be done.
Right.
And when you have that much stuff that needs to get moved around, it's going to result in a slower story.
There were a lot of unanswered questions at the end of the first cliffhanger that they had to sort of deal with.
Yeah, well, and apparently, I don't know what happened with Robbie Amell. I don't know how if that's actor stuff or if it's, they weren't feeling it. I don't know what happened there.
But whatever, it gave us Stein on the, at least for a little while.
Stein and Cisco together, so good.
Yeah. Well, my favorite new status quo bits was Cisco working with the cops.
Yes.
So he's working right alongside
Joe.
Joe, who continues to be a delight.
By the way, Jesse L. Martin is the MVP of this show.
Yeah, he is.
I was talking about this with you the other day, Randy. You know, we already know the show has an overall lighter tone.
Yeah.
I feel like Joe is like the kind of the veteran cop. Perfect character to, like, if you're going to drop some angst, he's the guy to do it.
Yeah.
And it's not like he doesn't do serious turns. He does great serious things. But he actually almost always brings a little bit of lightness.
He always seems to be having fun.
He's kind of quick to laugh at a lot. And I'm like,
yeah,
that so goes against type, but feels right for a show like Flash.
Yeah.
As does the sort of one of the at the core of the episode, or not the core, but there's a Flash celebration, or what?
Yeah, Flash Day.
Flash Day, yeah, which is something that has occurred in the comics. You know, they always made out that that Central City embraced Flash as their hero.
Well, this is also the first time that the public has actually seen the Flash.
Right, right, and that's kind of a big thing on the in the episode. But yeah, he's got their trust after, you know, specifically saving them from like the big black hole thing at the end of the previous season. And there is a little bit of forced angst into this show.
Yeah.
As well as like an ending turn, which I don't know if we want to like, if it particularly spoils anything.
Yeah, people know.
I mean, specifically with his dad.
Yeah.
Yeah, the whole thing with his dad was weird because
the big development of getting him out was cool. I was glad to see that happen and move the story forward.
But the way they wrote him out was like the weirdest way to do it. It's like if the actor doesn't want to be there, or if you don't want to have his dad there because it provides a weird contract. I get all that, but his dad basically saying I can't be here and you can't be the Flash when I'm here doesn't make any sense. Why not have his dad say there's too many memories in Central City, or I need to go do Doctors Without Borders or something and, you know, make up for my time or something. You know, give him a reason to go do a thing instead of this weird, like, I can't be here for you even though I've been wanting to see you for 14 years and that's all you wanted and I'm going to just go because that's – in no way is that better for either of them.
Is it just me or does that feel like a Geoff Johns?
Yes, it does. Yeah.
I have a weird theory that there's something else going on.
You think he's Barry Allen?
No, I think he's Zoom.
You think he's Zoom?
I do.
Oh, that's messed up. I've seen people have the theory that he was the original, because they're doing all the multiverse stuff, that John Wesley Shipp is actually the original Barry Allen, and that he doesn't want to be, like, he's going to go do his own thing.
I think there's something more to it, because the writers have shown that they definitely think proactively a bit, and it just feels like...
If they make him Zoom, I'm going to be really upset.
Well, here's the thing, like, the question would be, is like, is he really Zoom? Is he just possessed by Zoom? Is he, you know, a bunch of other questions. But... Was it Zoom or Reverse Flash in the comics? Who I always mixed up with the
Reverse Flash was the original guy, and then when Geoff Johns recreated him, it was Zoom.
And Zoom was the guy who had the somewhat ridiculous concept in the comics, villain hook of wanting to make Flash a better hero
by like murdering his mom.
Right.
Yeah.
Now that said, that sort of fits with what Nick was just saying. With you know, like. He specifically said he's leaving so that Barry can kind of continue to become what he's becoming. That does sound like Zoom.
Yeah, I don't buy it. I mean, partly because it sounds horrible to me, but it also, they already did the mentor, the father figure turning out to be the villain. I don't think you do that same trick.
Right. True.
I think that's a mistake.
Right. Unless it like plays out in a very different way.
But Zoom is mentioned here. He's the guy who is promising Atom Smasher they'll get him back to his own world.
Right, right, yeah. We know,
which is obviously Earth 2.
Earth 2, sure. But we don't know where Zoom, does Zoom come from. Earth 2 is what's his motivation? What's he trying to accomplish? And what is what is the whole thing with Jay Garrick? Because we barely see him, but there's some teasers of what's going on there. Lots of interesting stuff to be going on this season.
Yep, new episode tonight.
New episode tonight as we record this. Yes,
guess we'll find out some more stuff tonight.
Yeah, but you know, not a great episode back, but a solid episode back that reminded me what I liked about everything.
And also, just you know, it's like revisiting old friends. You're like, oh, Cisco, I love you.
And they didn't drag out stuff too much. Like Caitlin being on the outs with them, they didn't do this big thing where Caitlin can't be around them or anything like that. They didn't do this thing where Barry and Iris are pretty much where they were. They don't do this whole thing where he can't be with her because anyone in danger. They didn't roll everything back.
Yeah.
They did one episode of him trying to be on his own and them going, no, you can't do that. We're a team.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, I appreciate them kind of moving past the stuff sometimes that can go into hacky plot territory.
Yeah.
Just familiar tropes. And that point where the audience just feels like they're going through the motions until, like, we know you guys are going to make up, so just cut to the main.
Yeah, just cut to it, yeah.
And I'll throw out this. If you've not watched any of The Flash, and there's probably a few people out there who haven't. And if you have a Netflix account, it is the first entire season is on Netflix.
It just popped up on Netflix.
The superheroiest live action show of them all.
Yep.
It's one of the best television superhero.
It is probably my favorite superhero TV show. The only one that's close is Daredevil, and that's sort of a different thing.
Yeah. Right. Just such a different vibe.
Yeah. There is one more CW show to mention, and that is iZombie, which comes back, which also just popped up on Netflix.
Yep, it did.
My daughter started watching it, and she's liking it. Yeah. I thought this was a good first episode back.
Oh, yeah. It was great. A
lot of status quo changes.
Get off my lawn.
Liv eats a brain of a, like, sort of racist old man and is acting like a racist old man.
I mean, that's the thing. Whatever brain she eats, she takes on sort of attributes.
That. That's pretty great.
The actress who plays Liv is really, Rose McIver, is so good at taking on these little...
Basically, she is everything that...
should have cast her in Dollhouse.
Yeah. I was about to say, everything that Faith could never be in Dollhouse.
Eliza Dushku.
Yeah.
It was a great opener. There are some definite changes.
I love Steven Weber as the head of Max Rager. He's a great arc villain.
Well, I mean, I didn't know they were going to bring him back. Yeah. I loved him in the first season.
He's clearly the big arc villain of this season.
And, of course, the big bad of last season, his continuation.
Yes.
The guy who played Sark in Alias.
Yes.
I can never remember.
David Anders.
Oh, yeah. David Anders.
And he's really good. There's a great twist in here where they reveal the zombie cure that they've been working on side effect of being able to detect zombies.
And the thing that Major might be involved in is very strange.
Major's one of these characters who I thought he was going to be sort of the straight guy love interest. And they took him in a dark direction really quick.
They did.
And they made him sort of a character. He gave him his own standalone arc. And now he's in his own little world. And it's really interesting.
Well, talk about a good supporting cast. I mean, this has a great supporting cast.
It's a great supporting cast.
And they've done something with Liv, basically with the finale. They've taken some of those supporting cast away or put up walls against them. I mean, her family doesn't want anything to do with her.
And that's a great way to do, like, angst, but not unnecessary angst, because it's believable.
Yeah. And she still has her sort of compatriot, the person she
She's got Ravi, and he knows the deal, and he's a good character. He's one of those Xander-esque, Xander Willow, except a little more sort of charming and roguish than usually those guys are the ones who they can't get dates and all that. This is a guy who seems to do pretty well for himself.
Yeah, he's the geek, but he knows who he is and what he wants. So.
Yeah.
I actually think it's very much in key with, like, a Veronica Mars. I mean, of course it is Rob Thomas.
Yeah, sure. And Diane Ruggiero.
Yeah. So if you've liked any of that, I think you would love iZombie.
But also the big twist at the end with her new roommate.
Yeah.
There's some good stuff going on. This is a show that does really good episode. I know some people really don't like the episode of the week stuff.
Really?
Some people don't like how easy the crimes are solved.
Going on, like, that's a common thing in a lot of shows, is that people want the continuity stuff.
Yeah.
I think certain people plug into the sort of essentially the soap opera stuff.
Yeah.
I cut my teeth on, watching reruns of Star Trek, which were always standalone. I mean, that was just a common TV trope. And so I like Monster of the Week episodes when they're done well.
Me too. And they always do well with their Case of the Week.
Yeah. I mean, Buffy did it. I mean, basically, it was the starter for me of the standalone episodes, but they always at least had some chunk that moved the story forward.
A little bit of movement.
And iZombie's the same way. iZombie always has arc stuff.
Yeah. So does Flash. That sounds like a good approach.
It's a good mix. It's a good 50-50 mix. I mean, it's not so, like, you go back to, like, X-Files and that kind of stuff, and there'd be episodes that were all Monster of the Week and no arc.
Yeah.
And I remember that used to drive me crazy.
Really?
And now I look back, of course, Monster of the Week is usually the ones that hold up better.
Right.
But with iZombie...
Also at the time, they were figuring out how to do that for the first time. How do you do arcs?
Arcing was a new thing.
And I will say this about iZombie. It's my wife's favorite show.
Really?
She will watch... She will drop everything and watch that show.
I love iZombie. It's a great show.
Over The Flash, over any of her reality television.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay.
What's funny is it's so completely different from the comic that it was spawned from.
Yeah, it is.
But it's really good. Yeah. Finally, one last thing. I believe, I don't know if Dave actually, he witnessed it, but I don't think he spent any time.
I have not played.
But Nick and I both spent some time on Hoth this weekend.
It's true.
And also Sullust. And Tatooine.
And Tatooine.
Yeah. The Star Wars Battlefront beta, which, as you listen to this, has closed. They extended it one day, but it was today.
Yep.
It was fun.
It was fun, but I quickly found that I'd kind of gotten my fill, I think, the same way with you.
Well, the thing is that I saw some people just go completely off. They're like, I'm not buying this game. For me, it was enough to play that I'm like, oh, I can't wait for the full version.
Right.
Because the beta was fun. I had a blast playing around.
Yeah.
They had three modes unlocked. They had the solo and co-op mode that's on Tatooine, where you're sort of survival wave. And you fought like five waves of stormtroopers and AT-ATs, or AT-STs rather. Then they had the Sullust, like, pod capture, where escape pods land and you try to hold them and capture the most.
Capture
like three before the other team could get three.
Yep.
And then the big one was the 20-on-20 battles on Hoth.
Yeah.
Where assault walkers are trying to get to the base. You're trying, as the rebels, to set up uplinks so your Y-Wing can bomb them so you can destroy them. And as Imperials, you're trying to destroy those uplinks so the bombers can't come in as strongly. I found all of them to be fun. I had my most fun playing the Hoth stuff.
Yeah, I think I played more on Sullust.
Did you?
Than anything. Just because the smaller, you know...
Yeah.
What is it, like 8 on 8?
8 on 8, yeah.
Was sort of where I was at more. Although, I suck at this game.
Really?
I suck so hard.
I mean, I'm not great at this kind of thing.
I was at the bottom of every time I played.
Oh, I got about to middle.
Nick, yeah. Had you played any of the previous iterations?
I have. And I wasn't fantastic on those, but I still had fun with them.
I guess I'm trying to remember, was that...
You played Battlefront 2, right?
I played both Battlefront and Battlefront 2. I really liked them,
but
I was playing on the PC at the time, so I don't know how I would fare with a control pad and everything.
Oh, yeah.
But,
I got my ass killed so many times.
Oh, I always got killed a lot.
Now,
but I got to the point where I...
Was that back in the day for you?
Yeah,
But the fun thing about this, and the reason I'm all in on this game is because they had unlocked like these three modes, but there's like six more worlds in each mode.
Oh yeah,
and there's so much more to see.
I'm hoping there's more weapons and more upgrades.
I know there are. I know there's more vehicles, but for a beta, it was pretty full featured. You could run around and find these little tokens that let you play the jet. Like you could pawn the Jedi for a little while. I did get to play Luke Skywalker for a little tiny.
You get in ships,
and yes, you find if you're a rebel. You find a token that lets you fly an A-wing or a Y-wing or
Never found those.
Really? I flew all of them. I crashed. The A-wing is fast and crashes hard.
I got a snowspeeder. I did say that. I did, and I crashed that immediately into an AT-AT.
The A-wing has a little shield you can put up, and basically you're flying and you're fighting other fighters. There are TIE fighters up there too.
Right.
And so you're blasting other fighters, but you can also blast the ground troops.
Yeah.
But you're moving so fast, it's hard to see them.
Right.
And so when I went for strafing runs, half the time I would plow into the ground.
Right.
But. If
that makes sense as a game balance thing, so that the people on the ground aren't too intimidated by it, and you're kind of forced to stay a little bit to
there
the
are, if you're an Imperial, you can get into a gunner on the AT-AT, and you can wipe out some people.
Yeah, you can drive the AT-AT, which is a lot of fun.
Or an AT-ST, and you can just mow them down and run them over.
Yeah, the AT-AT was fun. Then you can find a token to play to ride the AT-ST. You can find a token to fly a TIE fighter and a TIE interceptor.
Yeah.
I never flew the interceptor. That was the only thing I didn't fly. And in the full game, there's going to be a fighter mode where you fly all these in, like, space.
Oh, wow.
Which is super cool.
That is really cool.
I guess that was something Battlefront 2 added, was a little bit of space combat, and I think there was something on board, like, a ship's hangar, as I recall, and, like, and I think maybe battles taking place in two ship hangars with occasional ships flying between them and fighting it out outside.
Right.
Now, I heard that on Hoth, I think I was seeing that the Imperials were always winning. Did you find
it
that
is
indicates?
The Imperials won all, not always. They did manage to lose a few times, but it is definitely weighted toward the AT-ATs destroying the generators, which makes sense because that's what happens.
Right.
It was pretty cool. I was playing the Imperials as one of the snowtroopers, which is the base one you play as, and I was in one of the foxholes of the rebels, and all of a sudden. I just see Darth Vader fly, jump over me, and start taking out the people I was about to kill, and I'm like, okay, that was kind of cool.
Yeah,
and then I got to gun down Luke Skywalker. Which
was
fun.
That's always kind of fun. They've also got all these guns, like they've got the big turret guns and little radar looking guns, and you can jump on those.
Yep.
They've got those little E-Web blasters that are multiple shot.
Yep.
And the tokens you find include things like there's a smart rocket, there's a portable force field that you can put up.
Yep.
There are all kinds of cool bonus weapons. Plus, there are four different energy weapons you can earn up in playing.
Mm-hmm.
And there's, like, thermal detonators. There's ion grenades that are really handy against vehicles.
Yep.
There's jump packs you can buy. There were, like, 10 different things you could equip your guys with.
Yeah,
you could
by contrast, I don't know if they do this in the game, but in the original one, you would, like, choose a jump jet trooper or choose a rocket.
Yeah, no, this is much more custom. They have what they call a hand.
Uh-huh.
You buy these things as if they were cards, and your hand has three things in it. Like, either the portable force field generator or the ion blaster that temporarily turns your gun into an ion blaster.
Well, that's kind of cool.
And then you can have a jump jet and an ion grenade or the thermal detonator, or...
Basically, every time you play, you earn credits.
Yeah, and that lets you buy more stuff that you can change up.
Right, I understand you might be able to, like, customize your laser pistol and stuff like that, or choose different ones.
Yeah, and there's also... There's the two-player co-op, so you can do split-screen co-op in survival mode, which was a lot of fun. There's a single-player mode, which there wasn't in old Battlefront. I was really impressed with this game. I thought the graphics were great. It is one of those sort of massive combat games where some, you know, 12-year-old's been playing all day is going to snipe you and you'll never know what happened.
Yep. Right.
That happens a lot. There's always the guys who just, they master the game. And if that kind of thing frustrates you, which it does with some of our friends, I understand why this game is not for you. Me, I'm used to getting killed in these games a lot, and I had a lot of fun getting a little bit better and getting to murder people.
Right. Every once in a while, I would fall into that groove where I'm like, oh, God, why am I just dying constantly? Yeah.
See, I would find that I would generally follow a few other troops, and then I would use them as stalking horses, because I would, like, there'd be another snowtrooper in front of me, and when I saw him go down, I knew there was rebels there, so I'd throw out a thermal detonator, and then I'd move up and shoot a few of them before they killed me. So
the you know, one thing I always wish with these kind of what do you call these games? It's a first person shooter, but it's like a versus thing.
I don't know, multiplayer skirmish.
Yeah,
I don't know.
is I wish they had like sort of a good first person training grounds.
And this one actually does.
I know that that does at least have some solo play stuff. You know, so that you're just like, okay, I want to learn how to throw a grenade, how to duck down, how to do all the basic stuff and get comfortable with it before I jump into the chaos that is a bazillion players shooting at me.
It wasn't unlocked on the beta, but they do have that. They have a single-player training
mode.
That's
cool. That's cool.
I wish they had a crouch. I wish they had a prone.
Yeah, me too. You can't lay flat on the ground. You can only crouch.
Where's my prone?
The final game comes out
late November.
November. I think I will probably have picked up a PS4 by then, so I can play this.
Yeah.
And when I played this on the PC, I got pretty good at it.
Yeah.
Good enough where I would, like, say, in the rankings at the end, I'm never going to be, like, the top guy. But yeah. I would be in the top third, like, most of the time.
Yeah.
Or top half, at least.
I got the top. At the end, there's like, three things they give you at the end of each level, like, whoever took the most bases. And I did, at one point, get the top, like, I got the most score. Like, I managed to activate a couple of
beacons
and kill a couple guys and managed to get the top score. And I was very happy with myself.
Nice. Most pleased with myself.
Yeah. This was a fun 4-day beta, or 5-day or whatever it was. And it seemed like there was enough content in there to get me through a few days. I definitely need a full game. Like, I didn't play the last couple of days. Yeah. I was like, I'd played it. I'd seen enough. I'd seen everything it had to do.
I do remember when I was playing it, you know, at my most dedicated. You know, I would get killed and then just, you know, instantly respawn, get back out there, just jump right into the game, obsessively playing it. Yep. Same way I played Team Fortress when I was playing that, or Team Fortress 2. And so I know that I can get pretty devoted to these for hours on end.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to trying it a little more, and I have a bunch of friends who are buying this on PS4, and maybe setting up a night where a bunch of us can get in and be like, we're the rebels.
Well, and they actually have a pretty easy way to do it, because all your friends, it'll tell you if they have the game and they're playing at the top. Like, would you like to invite this person? I saw you once pop up and then disappear, and I was like, okay. Well,
yeah, and I was dropping in and out, and Aaron was playing half the time. So, yeah. I'm looking forward to it. I've already pre-ordered my copy, and I didn't cancel my pre-order or anything, so I'm excited. Well, we want to talk Halloween movies, but that's going to have to wait till a less busy week, maybe next week. So that'll about wrap it up for us this week. Thank you guys for listening, and until next time, Yo-Jo! And that'll wrap it up for us this week. As always, you can drop us email with topic suggestions, things you want us to hear about, or just comments on the podcast at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at roguesgallery. Check us out on Facebook. Check out our website at www.roguesgallerytx.com. Check us out on Instagram at roguesgallerytx. And if you want to help us out, go over to iTunes and give us a 5-star rating and a little review. We'd very much appreciate it. And we will be back next week.